Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Want to apologize for the audio quality. I forgot to bring home my headset this weekend. Aaron, minus two big ones for me on that. But we're going to keep the podcast short and passionate, unlike today's top 25 rankings, Aaron, which were long and passionate. The meeting got a little heated, and we're just going to start off right at the top, Aaron. I think our top 25 rankings at the end of the regular season in college baseball for all but a handful of conferences. Everyone else is in conference tournaments. But you got teams like all the SEC, ACC teams, Big 12 teams have all played 56 games, Aaron. And after 56 games, I think it's fair to say that we think the team that old Haas Radburn would like the best, the team with the most grit, is our number one team, and that is the South Carolina Gamecocks, which is a meet the new boss, same as the old boss from last year.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they're, you know, all year long, I feel like they've been knocking on the door of being the number one team. I mean, they won those two series against number one teams, Florida and Vanderbilt, and for various reasons, they just couldn't quite get to that number one spot. But, you know, I think they're a very worthy number one team. You know, they are talented. They've got a lot of talent. I love their bullpen, you know, and to me, that was the strength of their team last year. The national championship run was fueled by the bullpen, and it's intact. You know, it's just as good as it was. Their starting pitching has held up nicely. I mean, Forrest Kumis and Colby Holmes both pitched very well this weekend, which is an encouraging sign. And you know, they're tough. Like you said, they've got the grit. That's why they are where they are. They've won a lot of series. They've won every series but once a year. And they went on the road this weekend and especially against Alabama, they needed to do in order to win the SEC outright, or not outright, but to be the number one seed. Here they are, number one.
Yeah, it's been, an incredible ride for South Carolina. And like you said, their bullpen is still their bullpen. Their coaching staff is still their coaching staff. And offensively, they have weathered. They just have weathered so many injuries this year. What's the prognosis? You're headed to Birmingham to Hoover for the SEC tournament. Are we going to see Jackie Bradley Jr. there? Is there any chance that he comes back late this season for that team?
I know he wants to come back maybe for the postseason run. I don't think he's going to be back this weekend. I haven't heard any updates on his status. I still wouldn't expect him to be back, but I know that he's trying his hardest to come back, and everyone says he's a fast healer, so we'll see.
We shall see. And then, Aaron, after that, Texas number two. I think we need to talk about the Longhorns a little bit. This is a team that just they really haven't had very many flashy weeks all year. Hard to say that when they're 40-13. This just seemed like the most under the radar number two after 56 games team that I can remember. I mean, Texas just does not. It just don't seem like we've talked about them that much this year. And they haven't had that big signature, oh, Texas just swept so-and-so, you know? Yeah. But here they are, Big 12 regular season champions, and with a pitching staff I would not want to face in a dark alley.
No. You're right, especially if Taylor Youngman's leading the way. I mean, that guy, that's the guy you want behind you in a bar fight. You know, I always say he'd be my pick if I needed to win one game tomorrow in college baseball. He's the guy I want. And you know, he didn't have his best outing on Thursday against A&M and John Stilson, but you look up and at the end of the day, he still throws a complete game, I believe, and allows two runs. So the guy just wins. He's as good as they come.
He's Al Davis's favorite college baseball player. It's
just win, baby.
It's ridiculous. And unlike Al, he doesn't look like a monster doing it. but then we really had some contention at the next really throughout the rest of the rankings, Aaron. Virginia swept by North Carolina. I think that was the whole source of the contention. When you really think about it, what do we do with the Cavaliers? What do we do with North Carolina? I actually wrote about it in Three Strikes, special guest appearance by John Manuel in Three Strikes today. What did you think of what we did with Virginia? Was it too harsh to move the Cavaliers down to five? And, you know, my first iteration of the top 25, I had North Carolina all the way up to eight, which obviously was too high, and nobody agreed with, and not even me, because I wound up saying, wait a minute, they shouldn't be ahead of Georgia Tech. But how do we different? What do we make of the ACC, where Virginia winds up tying for the ACC regular season championship with Georgia Tech? Are Danny Hall and Mike Fox two of our finalists for National Coach of the Year, or what? Just unbelievable coaching jobs, it seems like, by those two guys – getting 22 and 20 conference wins out of those two rosters.
You're right. It's really amazing, and you know, I think North Carolina is particularly amazing because as you wrote in Three Strikes and put it very well, this is not a vintage North Carolina team from the last 5 years. I mean, it's a little bit like South Carolina. They're just gritty, you know, and they find a way to win. I mean, the fact that they're 44 and 12 to me is pretty stunning given the way their roster is constructed. It's not an imposing lineup. It's not an imposing pitching staff. It's not, you know, it's a good lineup and it's a good pitching staff, but they don't scare you, and they just win games. And you know, the reason that they're not higher in the rankings is because they have had hiccups. You know, they've lost four series this year. You can't get around the fact that they were swept by NC State and that they lost a series to Wake Forest. You can't, you know, the fact that they melted down on Saturday at Georgia Tech and lost that series. You know, they would be a lot higher in the rankings, I think, if they had won that series. Instead, I mean, it's hard to move them ahead of Georgia Tech, which has a really good resume. And you talk about, again, a great coaching job by Danny Hall with a really young roster, especially of everyday players. I mean, they've got some experience in the pitching staff, but both those teams, very impressive. You're right, no question about it. And Virginia, yeah, it's harsh to move them down to number five. You know, they've been so consistent this whole year, but they got swept. They only scored three runs in three games. You know, Florida and Vanderbilt haven't gotten swept. And if it comes down to it, I think Florida and Vanderbilt are better teams than Virginia. I think Virginia's a great team. I think they're, you know, they're a worthy top five team. In a head-to-head series, I like those other two teams a little bit more.
Agree completely. That's why Florida is three and Vanderbilt is four and Virginia is five. I think on resume, you can make a lot of cases why Vanderbilt should be ahead of Florida. But the bottom line is the Gators went to Nashville and beat the Commodores. And yeah, the Commodores, I think, have a great record and great talent and, you know, did what they had to do this weekend after Michael Palazzone threw a complete game against them on Thursday night. That guy deserves some kudos, by the way, Michael Palazzone, for the big year he's had for Georgia. He's really carried a great weight for that team.
His stuff isn't as electric maybe as it was.
Certainly
when
it is not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when he showed up at Georgia out of high school, he was a power-armed guy that, you know, we thought was going to be an elite draft prospect. And I watched that game on Thursday, and it was really a mid to high 80s fastball. And
that's him.
He locates it so much better than they used to. That's the big thing. His fastball command's gotten a lot better. He pitches to contact. Yeah, he's one of the most improved players in the country.
I agree. I think the guy deserves a lot of kudos. But Vanderbilt went on the road and did what it needed to do. Florida won its series with Kentucky. You're headed to this SEC tournament, Aaron, and there are storylines galore. Two of the biggest ones involving teams that are not at Birmingham with or Hoover, with LSU and Ole Miss being left out. We'll talk stock report, I'm sure, this week. You'll write up the stock report. But let's face it, Aaron, the SEC, a team that we were talking about being a potential 10-bid league, there's no way that's happening, is there? Is there
no,
any way
not.
The SEC is a 10-bid league this year?
No, because I think even if Georgia and Auburn do enough this week to finish above 500, and in Georgia's case, that means they have to win at least three games in Hoover, and in Auburn's case, that means they have to win at least one game. If those things happen, I think LSU would get in as the ninth team, and I think Ole Miss would be left out. Now, I think Ole Miss's best chance to get a bid would be if one or both of those other two teams don't finish above 500, and then maybe LSU and Ole Miss could get bids without either being in Hoover, which is amazing, but I think that could happen. I think you could have eight bids from the SEC with Ole Miss and LSU being the other two. But I suspect the league will wind up with eight regardless, unless Georgia and Auburn both win, in which case I think LSU would be the ninth. But I think more likely is they wind up with eight.
I agree. I think that's the most likely scenario. Ole Miss certainly did not help itself this weekend by losing that series to Arkansas. Ole Miss's resume basically is they won a series at South Carolina, and hey, did we mention we're in the Southeastern Conference? You know, so tenth best RPI in the SEC. That's your Ole Miss Rebels, and I'm not saying they underachieved, but they're an older and more physical club. I'm just surprised that Ole Miss hasn't done better with the bats, as physical as they are. Everyone you talk to says that's a big, strong team of donkeys. But it hasn't worked out that way.
And they thought they were going to be good. You know, they come into the year, they had high expectations. They thought they were, you know, a borderline top 25 team. I think they thought they were a top 25 team. But it certainly has not played out that way. They've not been very consistent. And In any phase of the game, really, they've just been up and down. So they're on the bubble, and it's possible that if just one of those teams, Georgia or Auburn, finishes above 500, maybe Ole Miss gets in as the ninth team. That's possible too. It depends on what happens with the other bubble teams. I mean, it is a soft bubble. There's a lot of teams that we thought were kind of on the periphery that took a step back this weekend. I think what happened in the A-Sun, for instance, probably helps Ole Miss, where you had Jacksonville and East Tennessee State both losing their last weekend series. Jacksonville's right there on the bubble. I mean, its RPI is in that same range, and it's not in the SEC, and it finished four games behind Stetson. I think you look around the country. Texas State, another team that took a step back. Let's say they don't get the automatic bid in the Southland, they're not going to get an at-large, I don't think. So I think Ole Miss has a better case than them. I think if you look at Ole Miss compared to a lot of the other bubble teams, they still have a better resume.
Like even better than East Tennessee State. I mean, East Tennessee State went on the road, won a series at NC State. They went like with a 4-3 against ACC teams or something like that. I mean, the difference is they're fifth in the South in the Atlantic Sun Conference. But you've mentioned several times on the stock report that they don't seem like they care about conference finish. So if they don't care about the 10th place team in the SEC, then what do they care if it's the 5th place team in the Atlantic Sun if they have a good RPI?
It'll be interesting to see if the committee takes that same approach to the mid-majors, because we know that it does with the major conferences. It doesn't really matter where you finish in your conference that much, if you're in the Big 12 or the SEC. But I don't know if there's much of a precedent for a 5th place team in a conference like the A-Sun getting an at-large bid. Well,
That
we'll see.
said, they're nine spots ahead of Ole Miss in the RPI. So if it doesn't, so if conference ranking, that you just hit on the you hit on the argument that we're going to catch them in when they give the SEC 10 bids, because that's what they're going to. Now you're laying it out. You're frightening me. It's going to be a 10 bid league. And
It's possible, but I still wouldn't bet on that.
I sure, and this isn't because it's the SEC. I just sure hope not. I just don't think finishing 10th place in your league deserves to be rewarded. I'm not even sure that finishing in 5th place in your league deserves to be rewarded. I kind of hope East Tennessee State does something in the Atlantic Sun Conference tournament. But that league's, I think, a little bit better than people think, at least this year. So just my opinion, but I could be wrong. My sense is East Tennessee State did itself no favors by finishing fifth in that conference, no matter what their RPI is. I think you make great points. The bottom line is, Aaron, you got to get to 64. Ain't going to be easy.
That's right. It really is not. I think one thing that could help us get to 64 teams is if teams like, let's say, Creighton or UConn, let's say they don't win their automatic bids. Those are teams that I think would be solid at-large candidates. Certainly, Fresno State, TCU, those teams are probably. TCU is obviously a lock. I think Fresno, even after getting swept by Bakersfield, would probably be an at-large team if it doesn't get the automatic bid. It happens every year. There's favorites that don't win their conference tournaments and eat up at large spots. So that's probably what will happen and get us to 64.
You mentioned it, Aaron. Cal State Bakersfield sweeps Fresno State. Dallas Baptist sitting there at 45. Here's two independent teams. We had basically a long, long time, probably 20 years, where the only independent teams that got at-large bids were Miami early in the 90s when Cal State Northridge was an independent, and then Dallas Baptist a couple years ago. And now here you go. You might have two independents that get at-large bids this year. Has Bakersfield played its way back onto the bubble?
No, I don't think so. Their RPI is still in the 60s, and it's just, it's not going to get there. I don't think you'll see them get in, but I do think it's a great coaching job by Bill Kernan. I mean, they played a really tough schedule. They played everybody. Give them a lot of credit for putting together the season that they have. They're on the periphery of the bubble discussion, but I think on the wrong side of the bubble.
Getting swept by Riverside. That's the one they're going to look back at. And Riverside's a good team, solid program, well coached. That's the one they're going to look back at and say, if we swept that series or if we won that series, that's a tough one. Going on the road and winning a game at South Carolina, beating Arizona State, their resume has some good things on it. But I guess if you're measuring them up against Ole Miss, well, Ole Miss won a series against South Carolina. Cal State Bakersfield did not. So Kudos to them. And as Dallas Baptist, are they soft on the bubble in right now?
Yeah, I think they're in. I mean, it's, again, it depends what happens with some of those conference tournaments, but I like where they're at. I mean, it's not a slam dunk. You're right. I think you put it well. They're soft on the bubble in, but I do think at the end of the day, I think they'll get in.
It's the Baseball America podcast with John Manuel and Aaron Fitt. Aaron, at the back of the rankings, I had some struggles bringing in some teams. Nobody wants to be in our top 25 this year because when you get into the back of the top 25, you lose. Let's talk a little bit about some of the teams down there that are hot. Florida International remains hot. Troy winning the Sun Belt in the regular season, having a very nice year. You got UCLA back there. I think everybody knows their story. I want to talk a little bit about Conference USA. East Carolina comes into the rankings at 25. They swept Tulane. Rice won a series at Southern Mississippi, move up to 16. The Golden Eagles have lost two straight series, are down to 19. Let's talk about Rice and East Carolina. East Carolina feels like a team that is going to be a two seed, maybe a three seed, and is going to be plucky, but doesn't quite have enough. Rice, on the other hand, feels like a very, very dangerous team that's just figuring out just how good it can be.
I think you're right. With Rice, anytime you're building a team around two freshmen in the weekend rotation, they're very talented freshmen. I mean, we've talked all year about Austin Kubica and John Sims, but they've had some injuries that they've had to overcome. I mean, Jeremy Rathjen was supposed to be one of their biggest bats in the middle of the lineup. They lost him for the year. Chase McDowell was a valuable two-way guy, but especially valuable on the mound. They lost him for the year. They've taken some time to get their pitching sorted out. Tony Cingrani was a guy that they expected a big year from, got off to a bad start. He's really reemerged now. He's a force at the back of that bullpen. I mean, he's a big lefty throwing 94, 96. Boy, that's a nice piece to have back there. And I think the rotation is stabilized. I don't think it's a scary offense, but it's a solid offense. It's good enough, I think. Yeah, I agree. I think they're going to host a regional, which makes them dangerous. And I think they're capable of making a run here.
I agree. And then does that sweep kind of knock Tulane? They were on the bubble out, but they're not even in consideration, I would think, anymore. What's Conference USA's bid situation look like? Is it a four bid league with the three teams we've talked about and UCF?
That's it. You nailed it. Tulane, I think, is done unless they win the conference tournament. They needed to, at the very least, win that East Carolina series, and they probably needed to sweep it to get their RPI where it needed to be. But their chances are shot now. UCF has played very well down the stretch, and they're, I think, inside the top 20 in the RPI, and they've got a lot of quality wins. That's a team that thought about ranking a little bit this weekend as well. I mean, they've played well against some top 25 teams. They got a couple of wins midweek against Florida, I believe. That team is pretty good, and they're certainly going to be in. I think they're safe. They're probably a two seed.
Aaron, we have a little truncated podcast this week, so let's go ahead and get to some of the comments on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/baseballamerica. We've got almost 8,900 people who like the page, so join in, why don't you? Aaron, Clint Scholes wants to ask, which player should one look for if attending the Missouri Valley Tournament?
Well,
Missouri
certainly.
Valley Conference regular season champion, I believe, was Creighton,
Yeah,
correct?
that's right.
Creighton, not really a prospecting team for this year, but Ty Block has a shot to be a pretty good draft next year, does he not?
Yeah, he's a good pitcher. He's a really advanced feel for pitching. Pretty good stuff. I mean, he's a guy. I mean, Trevor Adams has had a great season for Creighton. He's not an elite prospect, but he's a really good college player. He's a guy that's going to jump out to you if you're at the Missouri Valley Conference because he's really given them a presence in the middle of that lineup that they needed. Wichita State has the better prospects, certainly with Charlie Lowell, a big left-hander who's probably going to go in the top what 2 rounds in the draft, I think.
I think we think he's got a shot to go up that high, that's for sure.
And Brian Flynn's a big physical lefty. Charlie O'Brien, the catcher's had a wonderful year for Wichita State. So they've got some pretty good players there. Those are the guys that really jump out, I think, in that league.
Some people really like Tyler Grimes too, their shortstop, although I know he hasn't really had a great offensive season this year, but his athleticism seems like it sticks out in that league anyway. For Wichita State, and I guess that there's a story there. I guess it's that That league was tight again. Illinois State, Missouri State kind of made a run at the bubble, then fell on its face at the end of the regular season. If somebody else, but you feel like if somebody else wins that tournament, Creighton will get in as an at-large team?
I think they probably will.
Okay.
They're not a lock, but they're in decent shape in the RPI. And I mean, the thing that gives me pause is they haven't really played a lot of elite teams, and they don't have a ton of quality wins. They're 1-0 against the top 50 in the RPI.
Okay.
That hurts them. But they are 10-5 against the top 100. They're inside the top 40. They've got 39 wins overall. I mean, I think they'll probably will get in, especially since it's a little bit of a soft bubble, like we talked about.
Aaron, how about this? Just came in the email. Brad Miller of Clemson named your ACC Player of the Year. I would not have predicted that at the beginning of the season, but what a year for Brad Miller. And Clemson to me also seems like a dangerous team in some ways, Aaron. I think their pitching is still a little rickety. Kevin Brady came back this week with three relief outings, 3 and 4 days, if memory serves. Maybe it was 3 and 5 days. Didn't look so hot on the third one. But if they can get Kevin Brady back into their rotation and get something as a starter for him out of in the postseason with Surratt, with Wiseman, with some of the rest of their starting pitching that I'm blanking on, with Will Lamb as a kind of a setup guy if they need him. That Clemson team seems dangerous, and in the right matchup, boy, if you don't have left-handed pitching, Clemson's going to hit you. They're going to hit against
Yeah,
you.
you're right. They've got a dangerous lineup, a physical lineup, and I think they're the highest scoring team in the ACC, and it's a lot of veteran guys. And I thought that was the strength of that team coming into the year, and it certainly has played out that way. The rotation has stabilized since they moved Dominic Leone to the Friday spot, and they
Thank
put
you, Dom
Wiseman.
Leone. He's the guy.
Right, and they put Wiseman at the back of the bullpen, which has certainly worked out. He's found a home there and been much better in relief than he was as a starter. So, you're right. It's not a great pitching staff, but it's pretty good. It's decent. I mean,
I think if
it's not.
they have a healthy Brady, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think he's the key to the whole deal. Healthy Kevin Brady, and I think Clemson's very dangerous, kind of like a Rice team. Both teams were ranked fairly highly in the preseason, took their lumps early, and as a mark of their coaches and the jobs their coaches and their coaching staffs do, they didn't panic. They didn't pack it up and pack it in. They just started working harder, and they grinded their way through the season. And both those teams, I think, are pretty dangerous come the postseason. Aaron, let's take a quick draft question before we log off. Clint Bolt, longtime reader of Baseball America and a longtime commenter, perhaps not on the scale of a Japers or a Joe Lucchese, but Clint Bolt deserves his own little mention in the wing of longtime BA fans. Asked about the mock draft, that went up last Friday. Come on, Clint. Projected number one pick, I believe we had Garrett Cole. Where do you see the Oklahoma boys going? That's where Clint's really from. He's a Sooner. Bundy and Bradley, and he also asked about how teams view Archie Bradley's Oklahoma football scholarship. Now, Archie Bradley is not on an Oklahoma football scholarship. He actually just the university sent out a press release within the last month announcing that he had signed to a baseball scholarship. So while Archie was a football recruit, I believe if he goes to Oklahoma, it will be to play baseball. I believe he could maybe still sign a two-sport contract. I don't think Archie Bradley's going to be a Sooner. I think he'll be a professional baseball player, and I think he's going to go out pretty good. It sounds like if you polled 30 clubs, maybe 17, 18 would have Archie Bradley as the number two high school righty, and 12 or 13 would have Taylor Greery, and I think it just depends on how they saw them. But everybody's going to have Dylan Bundy number one, Aaron. And before we got on this podcast, I think you and I both agree that Dylan Bundy, if it weren't for the fact that he's a high school right-handed pitcher, you'd be pretty tempted to put him as the number one prospect in this draft.
Yeah, I love the guy. I mean, I think if you compare him with all the other top prospects, he's almost the one with the least question marks. And you say that about a high school right-hander, and that's the only question mark is the fact that he's a high school right-hander. Look, he's never been number one, but his stuff is electric. People seem to like his mechanics. He's actually performed. Whereas Garrett Cole with his electric stuff has not performed nearly as well in college this year. And Rendon, we know about the questions with him and the shoulder and the fact that his performance hasn't been great as a junior. I mean, Bundy is really, really good, and I could see him going number two to the Mariners. I could see him going, maybe a couple of picks behind that, because it sounds like the Diamondbacks love Danny Holton. If he's there at three, you have to imagine they would take him. But who knows? I mean, I think Trevor Bauer could be in that mix as well. I think those are your top guys in some order. It sounds like it's Rendon, Cole, Holtz, and Bauer, and Bundy. Is that your sense, John?
That's my five. And I think Francisco Lindor is in that mix as well. I tell you that I think the Mariners, the sense that we've got is the Mariners are going position player, and that if Rendon is not there at two, they could go with maybe someone like Lindor, or Bubba Starling even perhaps. I think the sense is they're going position player, maybe not pitcher.
Yeah.
I definitely think the Pirates could go Cole or Rendon or Holton. I think for me, Gerrit Cole, even despite his inconsistent performance, is the guy to take there. I just think we need to ratchet down. Yeah, as I said all year, I don't think Gerrit Cole belongs in the, Strasburg, Pryor, Weaver, Price discussion of elite, epic college baseball pitcher slash prospect. But he's pretty doggone good. But Dylan Bundy, if he went, I think he'll go three to the Diamondbacks. Kevin Towers was at the Thursday, the Friday night game that we all went to here in North Carolina over in Chapel Hill with Danny Helton. Seemed like the whole Diamondbacks front office was here. Scouting director Ray Montgomery was there. I did not see Jerry DePoto, but I wouldn't know Jerry DePoto if he. No one who looked like Jerry DePoto was there, put it that way. A lot of other heat in there for that game. A lot of people there to see, obviously, Levi Michael. And Levi Michael had the big hit, RBI single that tied the game. It's a crazy way to end the podcast, Aaron. Would I have been crazy if I thought that Colin Moran should have been your ACC player of the year, even as a freshman?
He's certainly obviously the freshman of the year, I would have to imagine.
I think he was the most impactful offensive player in the league, even including Brad Miller, who had a great year, but had a great year of hitting singles.
I agree. I think Colin Moran has a great case for ACC Player of the Year. I mean, it's boy, that guy just gets big hit after big hit. He hits for power. He's anchored in the middle of that lineup, a really good team, and he's been, I think, the biggest key. I really believe if you had to pick one player in North Carolina, the reason that they're so good, it's Colin Moran. You're right. I mean, I probably would have voted for him for ACC Player of the Year.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I think it's you talk about how North Carolina overachieved in some ways this year, or was better than people thought they were. Well, the big reason is Colin Moran. That guy. I mean, hey, we thought he. There were some area guys who liked him last year at Long Island, but that dude is. We talk. We have talked a lot, Aaron, over the years about why the ACC does not win in Omaha. Players like Colin Moran are guys who win in Omaha. Guys who wear their first couple of at bats against Danny Hulton, going 0 for 2 with two strikeouts, and then ground out to second and leaving a bunch of runners on base in that third at bat, and don't get down about it. He's a tough some bitch, is that guy. So he's impressive. And I stand corrected. Brad Miller's OPS is actually higher than Colin Moran's, but I'll give, and Brad Miller does play in the middle of the diamond. Brad Miller is certainly not a bad choice as ACC Player of the Year, but Colin Moran is, that's an unbelievable year. I'm blown away by how good, how tough, and how resilient, really, Colin Moran is. He also made a really nice play on the last play of that game on Friday. Very fundamental play. Got his chest in front of it, wore it, picked up that ball through the first. That was a good game. It was a really good college baseball game, and we're going to see a lot more this week, tournament time. Aaron's going to SEC tournament. We'll be at the ACC tournament. Aaron's got a plane to catch. I'll let you go, Aaron. Great podcast. Thank you again for the time, and we'll talk to you later this week.
Always fun, John.
All right, Fitzy, for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.